You know, I usually casually talk about refugee experience, especially my own experience and stuff like that. So, you know, just please go ahead and edit and delete whatever you don't think is appropriate or you think is not too formal to the standard.
No, we edit everybody. Okay, everybody. Okay. So I'm going to just start with if you would introduce yourself and say I'm or I am and say your name and what you do here.
I am Sokkom Thoch and I'm the executive director of Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization in Portland, Oregon.
And would you tell me a little bit what it means to be a refugee?
I was a refugee in 1975, came into Portland back then somewhere in August in the 75, and the toughest thing is the change in culture, very shock in culture, and also the language barrier that we had back in the 75. And the job search is come up with the language skill. So we have a hard time really get a real job other than picking strawberry, dishwashing at a restaurant or busboy at a restaurant. And that's what my experience is. And we didn't even know how to take the bus at that time because no such a thing like this organization back then.
Let's talk about what it was like in Portland during that time. Were there any services?
There's not much services around. ERCO not exist until 1977. And since we do not have anybody who been here before us, we have a very hard problem trying to find appropriate service to help us out, other than our sponsor at that time was Catholic Charity. And what they did is they gave us money for rent and sent us for a job interview, and we had to go to regular employment office to find some art so we can follow up with the tip to look for employment.
When was ERCO founded?
In 1977, by a group of Asian. We have Vietnamese, Cambodian, and Laotian who come together, feel that we should try to form something that serve this newly arrived Southeast Asian refugee.
Were you one of the people?
I joined ERCO through a job search, and then they asked me to stay with them in a couple months later they asked me to stay there and work as an interpreter, my first job. And
well, what was Portland like at the time that you arrived?
Well, it's a small city. Not
can you start with Portland was
Portland was a small city, and my sponsor at that time is a Catholic charity. It's a father in Catholic Church, and airport is very small, and that my first introduction to Portland is the airport. And I didn't know where to go, waiting for my sponsor there. And they took me to the bridge, downtown bridge, and I was so impressed. And the I-84 at that time is only two lane, you know, varying from here all the way to Wood Village. And, you know, car is not that much at that time. We don't even have a high rise in the many high rise in the Portland downtown office. And the Chinatown is still very old, you know, very old Chinatown. Now it's look better, but when I first came, it's not a real city at all, you know, and dirty. And I also have people coming and telling me that to go back where I came from, you know.
In what way, like, describe that?
No, everybody doesn't know. Not many people know Cambodian.
Okay, hold on a second. Big truck going by.
Yeah.
At that time, people didn't know.
At that time, people did not know where Cambodia is and who is Cambodian. They always telling me that go back to Japan, because that's all they know probably at that time. And you know, people are now much friendlier. At that time, people not that much friendly, and they keep looking you like a stranger because you look different. You speak different. You didn't even speak the language at that time. And I always have my address with me at all time in case I get lost. several times that I stay in the bus for a long time because I don't know where to get off, you know, until I pull my address and show it to the driver and stuff like that.
Were there very many racist incidences with you or your friends or people that you knew?
The only thing that I know at that time, they felt that we come here to steal their job. You know, we come here to steal everything that they have. And I was interviewed at that time by a KGW radio on Sunday morning, and they found out that a lot of people misunderstood refugee because they felt that refugee caused many accidents in the town and come and steal their job. But our job, like my job, was before a strawberry picker, and none of the mainstream want to do that. A whole day, you earn $10 at that time, you know. So I felt that that's the only incident that I have, and it just a misunderstanding from the mainstream community that we are here to steal things from them. And I can understand that because we look different and we sound different. Plenty of accent, and Mozart doesn't speak English at all. So,
Jess, do you mind if we turn these lights off? Because I think there's a buzz.
From that?
No, it's not from the lights.
I think there's the air conditioning running all over.
It's usually from electricity, though. Might be your computer, but that's okay. That's okay.
Well, let me turn it.
Okay. Just trying to figure out where that buzz is coming from.
I think when you come here, you hear that sound, but.
But I didn't hear it because of the traffic, probably.
Yeah.
The air conditioning's gone now. I still hear a buzz. Oh, well. I don't know where it's from. Over there somewhere. Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's very good setting the time period for me about what Portland was like. Were there very many Asians or any people of color?
There's not many people of color in here at that time, and Asian is seemed to be the only refugee group in 1975. We had lots of Vietnamese, Cambodian, and Laotian at that time, Hmong and Mien. That's about it. And then to the mainstream people, they know only Japanese. And many times, either we are Chinese or Japanese, because they don't know where Southeast Asia is, or where Vietnam is, or Cambodia is.
Did you run into people who knew about Vietnam, though, and maybe were upset about the war, that kind of thing?
I heard about it, but I never run it into it myself.
Yeah, I was just wondering if maybe there was some anti-Vietnamese sentiment, too.
I think it probably that time is already, the war already end, and the anti-sentimental may not be there anymore since the war is already end.
What about economically? You mentioned people doing jobs like strawberry picking and more manual labor.
Yeah. The job, we're going to do anything to earn money at that time. You know, and after a strawberry picker is dishwasher for me, janitor, and until I land a job at ERCO here, become an interpreter. At that time, myself didn't even speak much English, but I know translation is a written material. We do Cambodian newspaper in ERCO here at that time. At that time, we call Indo-Chinese Center, not even ERCO, because it serves Indo-Chinese most of the time. And, you know, since then, I began to come to the office and work instead of going to the restaurant and at night cleaning at people office and people and medical clinic and stuff like that. That's what I did in the 75.
If you couldn't learn English as quickly as you did, what happened to people?
That The family is still, it's just, you know, they still have problem up to now because, you know, luckily the younger generation can do much better. You know, they have children that go to school and they can do a lot and become a good helper in the family. Other than that, the parents, I met people who still not speaking English after 20 or 30 years in here. So,
and what is it like for them?
They're going to have a hard time doing all kind of things. I don't think they ever work. They ever get a job.
Yeah, I was wondering about people who perhaps were highly educated in the homeland country and then here don't get to do, you know, what they were trained for.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people like that. And
can
you know,
give me some examples?
Example like the official from Cambodia. When they came here, they used to be having people serve them. And when they came here, you don't get that kind of stuff in the United States. And that where mentally they are very depressed. You know, they are, but they learn how to live with it, how to go with it. You know, they learn how to solve problems. You know, so they just, the earlier year they have a lot of problem, but later down the road they learn how to adapt with the situation.
What about some people who didn't?
I think the people who cannot do it, the children will somehow make them do it, because nowadays children, you know, at that time children is going to college, going to community college and stuff like that. They learn much, much faster than the parents.
So I also wonder about adjustment issues. What were some of the major adjustments? One you talked about was learning English and getting jobs. What are some of the other issues?
The child rearing practice is a big problem because back home we don't raise the children the way we raise here.
Describe the differences.
The difference is back home, we tend to take the discipline on our hand. You know, like hitting the children with a small stick and punish them through punishment rather than an advice and counseling type in here. I get a lot of call from authority trying to understand that why this family hitting children. Why this family having the 10-year-old kid go outside the house or 8-year-old kid go outside the house without any clothes. You know, though in Cambodia, it's normal, you know, but that's the way we raise children over there. And in here, children gonna be, have to be comply with the law, have to be do all kind of things that really different from back home. I think we have a parent-child service in here that go around and get to the community and then try to explain to them what's the difference and what the parent had to be careful when disciplining their children, you know.
In Cambodia, when you say striking children, I mean, that could be considered violence here.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give some examples?
Well, there's a case that using an incense, you know, very, very small stick, incense stick.
Oh, incense.
Yeah, and then hit the children, and she being deported.
Oh, can you say that again?
There
is a person, there's a woman?
There's a woman who tried to discipline the children by using the incense, the little stick that have incense in it, and then hit the children with it, and she's being deported. And
right now?
Right now in Cambodia now.
She is?
Yep.
How did that happen?
Well, there's a law that, you know, if you have domestic violence, if you have some kind of criminal background, doesn't matter. If you are not in the United States, does not matter when it's happened. The INS can go and make a case about you and proceed with deportation.
Wow.
Yep.
Is that recently?
This is the law passed in 1996. And, you know, mostly young adults, they each other when they went to school, like 12 years old and stuff like that. And when they grow up, this case still with them, even though they already paid for the crime they do or whatever offense they did. You know, like stealing a car and stuff like that. They had to do some kind of community service. If they admitted to that crime, their record still have that criminal, that crime.
Who reported her?
Well, when you go to interview for a citizen, you know, and your record, if the police have a record on you, you know.
No, I'm wondering who reported that incense incident.
I think probably the neighbor or the teacher or the neighbor, because this is in back home, the teacher never report this kind of stuff, yeah. You know. But here, when the teacher see some mark in your child, they report that. Or even the clinician, the nurse, they do that too.
This is not part of this story, but we're also doing stories about Cambodians who have been deported because of the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm, that's the one. Yep.
And we're trying to find actually a man that we can talk to, either in Cambodia or here, who's being deported. Do you know anybody?
I know the place, because in my last step I want to go to that area, and my son getting sick, and I had
there's
to cancel.
There's a place?
There's an agency, a program that try to sell this non-Cambodian speaker from United States, and they try to look for a job for them, try to counsel them and stuff like that. And I want to see the program manager to talk to him, and if there's a way I can talk to the deportee who currently in Cambodia now. But my son getting sick that day, and I had to be in the emergency room rather than going to
my appointment.
Oh, I'm
sorry about that. Yeah. Is there a way to find out who that is? And we can send somebody from, we have a reporter in Thailand who could probably go there.
Yeah, I have his email
later
down the road. I'm writing to that person.
Because you just came back, so it's very fresh for you.
Yeah.
But we're trying to do a story because the Patriot Act allows more and more people to be deported for very small offenses.
Very small offenses. And Cambodian happened to be very unfortunate one because the government accepted. You know, the Cambodian government have to accept that to really have this arrangement going on. And we see a film that, you know, where the father commit some kind of offenses when they were young in school, and now they are grow up having children of their own. And then the next thing I see is the INS officer escort them to the plane. And the 1 year old daughter keep running after him, say, daddy, daddy, you know, it's very, very traumatized.
Some people have been here for most of their lives and are being deported.
Yeah, because they've been here since the children. Whatever problem they have is this environment, not Cambodian environment. Because they raised in here, they came here like 8 years old, 9 years old, you know. So some of them happened to join the gang at that time in the late 90s and stuff like that. And their record is still exists. Once they go to interview for citizenship, that way they get busted.
Do you know anybody here in this country that is on the way to being deported that we could report on?
There are plenty of people.
Can you find out for us?
I cannot find the name, but I
or some organizations that are helping them, maybe?
I think an organization by the name of Sierra Southeast Asian Resort Center in D.C.
Oh, in D.C.? Okay.
Yeah, in D.C.
All right.
Work a lot with, you know, they advocate for these people.
Okay.
You know, and Seattle have a lot of people being deported.
Really? Right now?
Just a couple of years, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's a big case where people, where they began to fight our indefinite detention, you know. So they want that, but they don't win the deportation. They had to be deported.
Okay. If you do think of somebody, can you email me about it? Because we really want to find somebody that we could possibly help at this time, you know, get their story out. Some of the other adjustment issues, we've talked about poverty, language, child rearing. What are some of the others?
School that, PTA Association already want to involve parents in school. But Asian parents, it's now they began to involve, but not when they first came. They don't even speak English themselves. How can they be involved? They want their children to learn, to be excel in school, but as a parent, they may not know how to do it, how to proceed with it. So I see a lot of problem adjustment there. And just the day-to-day living, the food. I have to go to Chinatown to look for rice, myself, because we don't eat bread, we eat rice. And people told me, you go to Chinatown and get a lot of rice. They sell rice over there. So I went there and get a big sack of rice. It lasts only a couple of days. we are big rice eater.
What about things like having come from countries where there's been war and abuse and starvation? What are some of the, post-traumatic stress issues?
We had a lot of that, but in the University Hospital up the hill,
the OHSU.
OHSU held some kind of international counseling unit going on through post-traumatic healing. So we had a lot of Cambodian went there just for treatment or for medicine, and they been a great help to them.
Do most people think they have it?
Most people probably after been there for a while they know, but those who feel that they do it okay, they stop going there.
Because people don't talk about it.
Yeah, people does. It's embarrassing to say you have psychiatric problems or post-traumatic problems, in your head, because Asian feel that you're crazy instead. So people doesn't talk about that at all, basically. Besides their family, their husband or wife, they don't talk about it.
So how does it show up?
I think what it is they began to feel that they see a doctor, or there are something that they may not be able to keep the job, and they refer them to a doctor, and the doctor began to diagnose it. And we have a Cambodian counselor that go around from OHSU that talk to people.
And what kind of things do they find out when people go and talk to people about stress?
That's beyond my area, but I know there are some like depression, depressed all the time, or nightmare at night, yelling and screaming and stuff like that. So those are the type of signs that, they have this kind of illness from the war.
I would think also domestic violence, too. Is there some of that?
Domestic violence is not really surfacing because, people also, at that time, domestic violence is just a little crime. It's not like now.
I'm talking about now. There still...
Now,
issues?
People, especially Asian, know very well that there are some cases, but not a lot of them, because I have a service right here, DV services, where we have counselors, we have women come, be in the class and stuff like that.
So people are more aware now?
People are more aware of the law. We have a family law education in here, too.
Okay. There's so much more available to people now.
Yeah.
You recently, I also want to talk about when the refugees first came, what about healthcare and medical practices? Wasn't that a big change?
It is a big change. The way just the doctor visit is different already because when we first came, we already required to be immunized. We already required to cure the TB. That we usually, everybody has it in Cambodia because that's how they treat it, by putting some virus in your body. And when you come here through the test, it shows. But they have you take a year long.
Come in a little bit closer.
They have you take a year long of medicine. Those are the type of things that.
I was thinking about the kind of medicine that you might have in Cambodia be different, like in different medical practices.
Well, we believe in the countryside, we believe in spiritual healing more than in a city. In the city, they have medical facilities and stuff like that. So it's much more westernized. But in the country, they believe that there's something wrong, what you did, you know, to the spirit and stuff like that. But now, you know, people still believe in it because of this belief passed through generation to generation. And I hope that my younger generation would, you know, would be better off with Western medicine practice.
But it's also about spiritual healing too. So what about spiritual practices at that time? How did people, you know, practice their religions?
We have our own temple, you know.
Was there one here in Portland?
Not for Cambodian, but I'm the first one that, you know, a group of Cambodians tried to form the temple in 1980.
But there's a temple now, isn't
there? Yeah, it is. There's a big one in Westland now.
Oh, in Westland?
Yeah.
Okay.
So everybody go there.
When do they go usually?
They go when they have a Buddhist ceremony, big holiday for the religious holiday, and they go there.
There's one coming up, isn't there, in August?
I think in September.
Oh, September.
Yeah, there's supposed to be one coming up, and the senior usually go there weekly.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, they do. They go
and
there
sing?
Weekly. Yeah, and sing the Buddhist rhythm and stuff like that. And the senior is the one that closely practice Buddhism, but for younger generation, they usually go there with their parent only. You know, that's what also I'm trying to teach my kid to be aware of that religion also.
Is it Buddhist religion?
Yes.
Is it possible to record some of the singing sometime? Or is there, do you have a CD of it that they did? Or
yes, they have
a CD.
Yeah.
Can I buy that?
No, it's not.
No?
It's not a CD. It's a
cassette
video, the tape, you know. We did that all the time, so it's not rare to find.
That's a loud one.
Yeah.
Oh, so would it be possible for me to record sometime?
Yeah, you can just...
Like, with just like this?
Yeah. You know, for example, like when they do a ceremony.
Yeah.
You can just show up and then open this up.
And they think that's okay?
They think
I should call ahead.
You can call me.
I'll call you.
Okay. The people that work in there to try to organize too, and we have all kind of events and some big events.
But there's one in September. I should come to that. Yeah.
There's one in September for.
Can anybody come?
Anybody can come. Yeah. Anybody can come, and there are some 15 days in September.
Okay.
And the final day would be somewhere early October.
Okay.
But starting from September 15 or so, there's, you know, like per region, this region for one day, the other region for another day, you know, and then they all come together on the final day.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah. Because September is, to us in Cambodia, is where we began a raining season, where the monk cannot go out and ask for food anymore, so the people kind of bring the food to the monk. That's why they put region to region around the temple itself. Yeah.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah.
It's just a lovely image,
yeah.
You know. When does it start? What date?
I do not know exactly, but I know it's around mid to late September they began that.
I'll check back with you on that, yeah. I know, you know, is that your watch correct? Is that the right time?
Yes.
Okay. you look over there. I want to also talk about your recent trip to Cambodia, and what do most Cambodians and most refugees still have ties to homeland?
Yes.
What, describe those ties. How strong is that?
Very strong, because...
Can you start with the ties to the homeland?
Yeah. Most Cambodians who've been here have some kind of relative back home. And relative, we still keep our custom, you know, you support, like, you are older brother, you're supposed to take care of the rest of the siblings. And that's why there's a lot money sent to them, you know, like we have a parent, some build a house for the parent and stuff like that. So the relationship is still very strong in terms of relationship in Cambodian community. Even though they are back home and we are here, we still send money to them.
Have there been a lot of people who wanted to move back too?
Yes, there are some people, but it mostly are people who already retired, doesn't have to work. You know, they can just go there and live there easily because it's very cheap to live in Cambodia. If you're just regular people, don't have to have mansion and stuff like that. It should be very cheap.
Oh, you want a drink? I've just heard that a lot of people, Vietnamese, especially in Cambodian, go back and want to retire there and have business, or go and have businesses.
Well, I don't think the law there is, you get used to the law here, you know, and it's not going to be the same in Cambodia. It's a lot of bribery if you want to open a business, which not going to happen. You just pay a license fee in here, and then you can open your business. But there is operated completely different. So, you know, you go, I chose to go for a vacation, like to see the family members and to see the place that I had not seen when I was young.
How was that trip for you? What did describe to me what you did and what you saw?
Well, there's a lot of poor people, very unfortunate children out of poor that had to sell stuff at tourist site to make ends meet. You know, so, and those children are supposed to be in school. You know, of course, there's a lot of improvement. You know, like a lot of restaurants, a lot of establishment, nightclub and stuff like that. But those are just for the rich, you know. After they work and they probably enjoy themselves, but the poor, if you can earn just $2 per day from a hard work, 10 or 12 hours per day, you consider to be very lucky.
What about the government? What's it like now?
The government just try to do their best, but you know, I see there is plenty of law, but there's no enforcement. There's already people live about the law in there. So it's hard for people from the United States to really go there and live, be like regular people.
What did you go back to some of your childhood places? What
yes,
was that
I
like?
Did. It changed a lot. A couple of people that went to school with me when I was young didn't even, in elementary school, we didn't even recognize each other because all are grown up. Getting old now, so I've been there, and I took my children over there for them to see. This is where I came from. This is the school that I went to, and you know, it's not like school in here. So it's just a building, plenty of table, you know, and chalkboard.
How old were you when you left?
I was 22 years old.
Yeah. So you were an adult.
Yeah,
I was already an adult.
I was in the Navy, Cambodian Navy, when I left Cambodia.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were fighting the war then?
Well, I just joined the Navy for a year and a half or 2 years, I think. But I have not had any war experience at all.
You didn't see any action, huh?
I didn't have any really war action at all.
I don't think people also don't realize how much the U.S., I guess, did in Southeast Asia besides Vietnam. And cause so many people to have to leave?
I see that because, you know, there's a town next to my town. It's not really next, but the next province. It was bombed by B-52. And what they did is, you know, anybody injured can $200.
What does that mean?
To just pay for the thing that they've done. But $200 to Cambodian is a lot. But this how they destabilize Cambodian society. And most Americans didn't know that. And I think, you know, the war and the Khmer Rouge, who people which United States know very well, but ignore to be, to have, you know, or do little or nothing to have.
What is the challenge for Cambodia right now?
Cambodian, you know, they usually surviving. You know, they can make all kind, you know, like a motorcycle, they can expand it to put more people in. You know, they have all kind a mine, a bomb hunter, for example.
Oh, yeah, tell me about that film. What is that?
I think it's talk about some documentary.
Oh, okay,
in
sorry,
Cambodia.
Go ahead. Yeah, about the mines.
Yeah,
right.
The mine, yeah. Cambodians use the mine shell to sell for scrap metal. So, you know.
You mean they try to get the scrap metal?
From the mine. Oh, yeah. You know,
is that what it's about?
Yeah, that because this guy went there to document one of those things. And
they get blown up?
Well, they supposedly very experienced. But, you know, you see that it become a normal life for them. So they cannot survive. But, you know, what I want to see is, you know, Red Cross, Cambodian Red Cross, can do as much as they can.
Red Cross?
Yeah, Cambodian Red Cross.
What about, like, industries? Are all the other countries going to swoop into Cambodia and start making them make shoes? I mean, what's going on with that?
Well, there's some foreign industry in there, manufacturing like the mostly clothes material.
That's what I would think, because
yeah.
Cheap labor.
Yeah,
right?
The cheap labor. But the problem is they pay them so little. You know, like I have a friend there who put button into the shirt, and one shirt he earned like 10 cents. And when you buy it here, they sell it for $70. So.
I know.
So. What I want to see is a fair payment to those Cambodians who work very hard. And what they need is more vocational school, more skill training, where Cambodian children can learn some kind of skills so they can earn a livable job.
There was a controversy about someone who wanted to make the killing fields like a commercial park or something. Is that still going on? He was going to charge admission to people to see the bones of people? I don't know.
There's always a way to make money in Cambodia by the authority. You know, so if they can make money, they're going to make money.
That's sad.
You know, the forest, the big jungle of Cambodia is clear out. And the month that I was there, there's no rain. And farmers have a problem cultivating their crop, and they end up, you know, by buying grass from the town that from other area to feed the cows, and never happened in Cambodia before. And you know, they either hear about the drought or a hunger or anything like that. African Cambodian Red Cross would have 5 kilograms of rice and a couple other miscellaneous items to give it to the people. But you know what? It lasts only 2 or 3 days. Had they established employment for them and trained them some skill, I think that would be better for Cambodian society now and in the future. Because once the kid, young adult, doesn't have a job, they get among themselves and play cards and drink, and then afterward, time kind of follow. You see, and in the first page, front page of daily newspaper, full of killing. I read in Cambodia, it's full of killing. You know, about each people killing each other's robbery and stuff like that. So it seemed to be more and more violent.
And it all has to do with economics, then it sounds like.
Yeah, and what they need to do is to have some kind of skill training for the people that are ready to become a labor for the country. And for now, there's no such thing. I know there are some NGO trying to do it, and one of them going to be here in ERCO in October trying to spread the
Who's
word.
That?
Well, the organization, the my name is the you heard about the flute player?
Yeah, he's from Boston.
Yeah, he's
going
to be here.
Here?
Yeah, he's going to be here in October to talk to other people.
Is he going to perform too?
He usually do that before he talk to people, you know.
I have to be here. I want to interview him. I'll do a story about
sure.
him. Yeah.
And he's the one that helped found an NGO called CVDC, Cambodian Volunteer for Community Development.
Okay.
And this group is the one that really train, provide skill to the young kid. You know, like micro enterprise, which works so well in Bangladesh, should be the type of thing that going providing to Cambodian people in Cambodia, because you know they don't have anything to really a major profession for them, so they can raise their family and send the kid to school. Now the kid selling all kind of thing in a tourist site, and that's the time that they should be in school instead of trying to make ends meet.
Well, I see we're close to the time here. Can I take your picture?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe behind your desk?
Yep.
You can turn the light back on, too.
I have one meeting tonight, but the board says it's going to be Hawaiian theme.
I was wondering why you had that Hawaiian shirt on. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Is that an award there? Maybe I can get the award.